Any questions from last couple lectures? Go ahead. Would you like to do now? I'm sorry to be. You know, students have asked over the years to go electronic, and this is the first semester I'm doing that for homework, so that also uploads, you know, when it can be turned in, and also gives one more lecture in case I get behind. That way, lecture is still ahead of homework. So a couple reasons for that. So we'll cover some things today that you'll need for homework once, for example. So some I'm trying out. We'll see. It's the first time I've done this. From my head, the homework turned in during lecture. So we'll see how it goes. Any other questions? One projector working, to be precise. Two screens. Maybe the screen isn't working either. Okay. Any other questions?
The book site, I guess it's for the newest one for 2015.
Yes.
Does this all sync up with the
2015? All sync. So what it is there is one book in two versions. So you can say there are two books with a common version, however you want to look at it. So signal processing first is really intended for a semester-long class with more or less equal treat. So there's the basic stuff we're doing now on sinusoids, and if you roll through the content, you'll notice that we do discrete time first and continuous time second. So that's the signal processing first book, and it goes all the way through Fourier transforms. We'll augment that with another reference for Laplace transforms at the very end. DSP first is a subset of this. So DSP first is meant for a 10-week quarter, and it doesn't have the continuous time chapters toward the end. So it does not have the continuous time Fourier transform, continuous time frequency response, continuous time interpretation of sampling and aliasing in the DSP first book. Otherwise, they're the same.
Okay.
Same content. Now, there are three iterations. There's DSP first, first edition, 98, your exact year. There's this, 2003, and then there's DSP first, second edition, 2015. The demos are the same. So the good news is they've kept up to date. The website, which is the dspfirst.jotech.edu for Georgia Tech, is kept up to date because of the second edition of DSP first and people who are using signal processing first. Right, so this is the website for the book. So you've got all the demos are here by chapter, and the chapters lay out pretty similar to so what you see on the left is the DSP first chapters, but you'll notice they're the same. All right, and then this signal processing first adds some additional chapters. You still find your way fine. So there's MATLAB extensions in their toolbox, their demos. Some of them are pre-made and up on the web, preloaded. Some are MATLAB code you can run, come in two different styles or flavors. Slides to go with the book, some examples, some exercises, some mini projects. So that's where I'll pull the mini projects from. And I'll scale it down as is appropriate. So that's the website for the book. So a lot of good stuff. And we'll run demos from this website. So the first one will either today or Tuesday, depends how far we get today. Okay, so we'll move, we left off on periodic signals. Once things are working, we'll play videos before class at some point. Things just are not cooperating. So the audio not working today, and one projector out, so it's okay. Homework's due tomorrow at 12:30. You got expos coming up, three flavors. Probably depends on your interest, but if your interests are there, all three are probably worthwhile going to. Bring your ID, bring your resume. even though they'll have to submit it electronically, even if you have a hard copy. But still, the hard copy is useful, you know, as a conversation starter. Okay. So we'll be recording of this lecture because there's someone with an excused absence for today. So we'll record and post lecture and a different recording technology, so hopefully a little better quality. Okay. All right, so periodic signals. Where we left off, we reviewed periodicity. Shift the signal by capital T seconds, you get back the same signal. The smallest value of that period is a fundamental period. The smallest positive value for capital T is a fundamental period. We talked about time shift, reviewed that. We also talked about if I shift in time a sinusoidal signal, I get a phase shift. And this is very useful in what applications? It last time. Radar, sonar, ultrasound, name it. Into the body, sonar underwater, radar. So radar is not just up in the air anymore. It's also horizontal looking, used in driver assistance systems or automated driver assistance systems. All right, pretty good stuff. So that's, and so the signal that is sent out, we'll talk about either this lecture or next, which is the chirp signal, probably next on Tuesday. So the signal that radar and sonar will send out is a chirp. Now that's a weird chirp, okay, birds chirp. So the chirp is a tone with frequency increasing or decreasing with time. And we'll talk about that, there's a lot in the book about it. So it's a fundamental signal for trying to determine how far away an object is. So we'll get to this. So you send the chirp out, you listen for the echo, you try to match things up, and that echo, getting the time delay, it becomes a phase shift. You can detect that phase shift and work backwards to a time delay. So lots of ways to use the chirp, and we'll talk about that again coming up. Okay, so time shift gives you a phase shift with some ambiguity, right? The cosine has got the 2π periodicity. So your time shift, it's wonderful, I get a phase shift. The phase shift is linear with respect to the time shift. The time shift here is T1, and the phase shift is minus 2π times the frequency of the cosine F0 times the time shift T1. So that is pretty clear until you hit 2π, right? So once you have enough time shift, you go through one period of the cosine, and now there's some ambiguity. Okay, so with that ambiguity, you've got to figure out. So you try to work this problem so that you don't get that ambiguity. Right? So you make sure that for the time delays that you're interested in, you don't cross this 2π periodicity. Now, if you do, you have to do some extra processing to figure out what that T1 really is if you go across the 2π boundary. All right, this is just some MATLAB code to show that if you plot, you know, 2π, so if you plot just a regular cosine, 440 hertz by itself with a phase of 0 or a phase of 2π, you would just see the same waveform. So what I guess the MATLAB code only plots the cosine at 2π F0 times T. We have to add a 2π, but it will be the same. It will look the same. Okay, now sampling. Now, we've been doing sampling all along. In fact, if we go back to the last MATLAB program here, so we're on slide 2-4. In order to get a plot, we had to sample this signal. We had to sample the cosine. So I have, you know, F0 at 440 hertz, my frequency of the sinusoid. I have some sampling rate, which tells me how many samples am I going to take per second. And I've set it here to be 24 times F0. So I'm taking samples at a much, much higher rate than the frequency of the cosine, F0. The sampling time is in seconds. It just went over the sampling rate. So the sampling rate's in cycles per second. I invert that, I get seconds. And I'm going to show this over four periods of the cosine. So this was our vector notation. So we start at time 0. We end at 4 over F0, right? 1 over F0 is the what? Is the period, got it, right. So it's the period of the cosine, 1 over f naught. So 4 times, or 4 divided by f naught, is 4 periods of the cosine. And that's what should have been plotted up above. And then I generate the cosine signal, but I don't generate it for all real values of time. I want to only generate x as a vector of amplitudes at the points in time that I want to sample. So even when I'm plotting, I've got to sample the signal. Okay, now here the samples that I'm taking are uniformly spaced in time. And they're spaced apart by how much? Ts, right, which is the sampling time, which is 1 over the sampling rate. Okay, so it's a very small amount of time relative to the period of the cosine. In fact, you can kind of figure out what that is, because we know what the sampling rate is, right? We know that the sampling rate is, this is a new glass marker, so for the glass board, so we'll see if it makes a difference. It should have less reflectivity, and I think we can probably get lights on if we need to. So the sampling rate is 24 times f naught. The sampling time is 1 over fs, so this is now 1 over 24 f naught, the way I've done it. And this means I'm, 1/24th times 1 over f naught. So again, 1 over f naught, this is the period, fundamental period of the cosine. That means that my sampling time is much, much smaller. In fact, it's 1 over 24th the amount of the fundamental period. Another way to look at that is it's saying, how many samples in the period of the cosine am I going to be taking?
24,
good. Okay, good, 24. That's a lot. We need to take more than 2 to keep up with the oscillating frequency. This is the sampling theorem again, which we will state formally in just a second. And we'll revisit it several times in this semester. So to get a good plot of the cosine, we want to oversample. We want to sample it much more than just above 2 samples per period of the cosine. Here we're sampling at 24 samples per period of the cosine. When you're sampling that much, so what is MATLAB going to do? It's going to take this vector of samples x, which is now 24 samples per period of the cosine, and then draw lines from one sample to the next in terms of amplitude. All right, so it's going to connect the dots. And it doesn't look like it's doing that, at least unless your eyes are really, really good, but from a quick glance at this, it looks like a smooth plot of the cosine. So we'll look at some cases where it won't be so smooth in a couple of slides. Okay. So this is known as oversampling. And oversampling is a good thing. It means we have to sample it now. Some trade-offs, I got to sample at a higher rate. I may need to have faster, processing power or something, but the signal quality is much better with a higher sampling rate. So that kind of leads us into the sampling slide here on 2-5. So many signals originate in continuous time. Right now we had a formula, but you're singing in the microphone, and we'll do some acquisition in MATLAB of sounds later in this, just next week probably, and I'll have you do some of that too. So we can acquire through a microphone a continuous time signal, right? Microphone has what in it? What's in the microphone? I hear a physical
analog digital.
There's an analog digital converter. So yeah. So let's talk about the microphone for a second. So I've got an A to D converter. So it depends on this would be a digital microphone now. So this will have a digital out. Okay, but I got sound waves coming in something's got to convert those pressure waves into a voltage that the A/D converter can work with. What's that called?
Diaphragm.
Could be, there is a, yes, there is a diaphragm in it, and how would you, is there another name you can come up with? There is a diaphragm, there is a mechanical diaphragm that's going to be pushed back and forth by the pressure waves, right? And there's a conversion of that displacement into electricity. And I heard it a second ago. I heard it. Piezoelectric something. I thought I heard that earlier. So there's lots of ways you can describe. There's some device that takes in, again, this would be, over the air. So this is pressure waves. I could call it, there are lots of names for this. I'll call it a transducer, a diaphragm. By different names for the same thing. So it's going to take the pressure wave, the pressure intensity, and convert it into voltage. And of course, with that will be current. And the A/D converter is going to run at a certain sampling rate. So buried in the A/D converter is some device that's opening and closing a switch to gate the information on the input, which is really just a voltage signal, to get something on the output. Okay, so I'm going to have a discrete time signal on the output. So this is analog. So the voltage and current signal is analog and continuous time. And the output of the A/D converter, well, I know it's got to be discrete time because I'm sampling. What about the amplitude? This is what you did in an internal embedded systems, right? W319K. So what does the output look, what is the format of this output of the A/D converter? Is it a real number? Is it a... Some number of, I heard it, some number of... Yeah, it could be a byte or some number of bits. So it's going to be in some quantized format. We'll call it capital B bits. So is the amplitude digital or analog on the output of the A/D converter?
Digital.
It's digital. Okay, so it's digital and discrete time. Now, depending on the microphone, this could be different formats coming off the, coming out of the microphone. So it could be a 16-bit per sample. Could be a higher end, 20. It's supposed to be 24. There also, there's a one, a crazy version that's one bit streaming out. Okay, so all kinds of different formats that could be here. But for us, we're going to, so B, capital B is something. It could be, 16 bits, 20 bits, 24 bits, whatever. Okay, so the sampling process is in the A/D converter. We'll talk about that in some detail right now. Okay, so back to slide 2-5. So many signals originate as continuous type signals, voice, conventional music, and we want to get that somehow converted to discrete time digital. We can have audio effects added in more easily. We can use a mixing board for either analog input or digital input. We certainly want to like the digital discrete time format. We can store it, we can transmit it, we can process it further. Sometimes microphones have audio effects built into the microphone. Okay. So visually what we want to do, mathematically what we want to do is sample in the continuous time domain the signal y of t to get y of n. So y of t would be in, we're not doing more than sampling here. So let's talk about, so let's do that. So I have y of t coming in. And in principle, there is a switch that's opening and closing at some rate. Okay, so it really is a switch, opening and closing, driven by some oscillating signal. It could be a clock signal, it could be a sinusoid. at frequency, at fundamental, has a frequency FS associated with it. So Y of N is going to be Y of T, where I'm evaluating T at these integer multiples of the sampling time, or equivalently, little t equals little n divided by the sampling rate. Either one is fine. Can you read the back row in the handwriting? So we go ahead and skip to the visual on this one. So for the for a sinusoidal signal, essentially what's happening is, I have, this is hand drawn, so there's been a little bit of, you know, it's not as smooth as it should be. So hand drawn sinusoid in this case for Y of T, and I'm going to take samples that are uniformly spaced in time. Okay, so I have a mapping between continuous time and discrete time at those points. So index, so I can think of this as a discrete time signal, Y of N. And in that case, the origin's easy, it's zero, and N is zero, and capital T is, right, if N is zero, So if N is zero, little t is zero. I asked you for the wrong thing, sorry. So little t is zero, so I'm at the origin. Next sample is one, so what time in seconds is this?
The sampling
period. Sampling period. Right, capital T of S is known as the sampling period. It could be called the sampling time, sampling duration, has all kinds of names that are equivalent. So here is capital TS. Index 2, 2 times capital TS, and so forth. These are uniformly spaced samples, uniformly spaced in time. There's no quantization of the amplitude. I'm simply capturing the analog amplitude at those points in time. I may quantize them later. That's a different process, different step. Right now, I'm just sampling. Okay, so what I have, so I start here, Y of T is a cosine of frequency F naught, phase shift phi, amplitude capital A. After sampling, what I'm going to get, well, it's not going to, you know, again, we're assuming the sampling is ideal. There's no loss of the value of the amplitude of Y of T, that we've captured it perfectly. We'll come back and talk about, you know, the practical side of thing a little bit later. But for now, we're just doing just idealism here, ideal capturing of the amplitude value. So I get back a sample version. So the Y of N is a cosine with amplitude capital A, and phase shift is the same, hasn't changed. The frequency has gone through a little bit of a transformation here, and that may or may not be fine. It just depends on how fast we're sampling. And by fine, I mean, can I take Y of N in discrete time and find my way back to Y of T? Can I reconstruct Y of T from the samples Y of N? We'd like to do that. I mean, often we're converting to discrete time to do some processing on the signal, and at a later time, we like to get it back into continuous time, play it back over speakers. Right, if it's an image, we'd like to display it on a monitor, screen, smartphone, whatever it is. Okay, so now the frequency's gone through a change here, because now when I substitute little t equal to little n times capital TS, now you notice that now my frequency information is different. And it's now been scaled or normalized by the sampling rate. So let's talk about that now. And this is really a good, you know, we're going to be using cosines until we're finished with the final exam. It's going to be a friendly signal. But it's really a nice way, if I'm thinking about a single frequency and what happens, cosine's an ideal way to think about it. Right? So here we're trying to keep it pretty simple. We have one frequency F naught, one positive frequency F naught, and we'll see what happens when we sample it again. So Y of T is A times cosine 2 pi F naught T plus phi. I sample this, so Y of N is simply Y of T, where I substitute in little t to be little n times ts, or again, I can do little n divided by fs. So carry through, it's also what's already on the slide, but what I'm going to do differently here is I'm going to substitute in little n divided by fs for little t. So I get a times cosine 2 pi. Now I get a ratio of f naught divided by fs times n plus the phase shift phi. So now I have a new frequency. And that new frequency is sitting right here. It's whatever in front of the little n. This is my discrete time frequency. We'll call it omega naught. Now, I'll be warning you ahead of time, I'll use a little omega. Sometimes it means discrete time frequency, and sometimes it means continuous time frequency, so the context will be important here. But here we're talking about discrete time frequency. And if you look at this formula, so it's a fundamental one, and I don't want you to memorize this thing. But you can derive it yourself very easily. I start with a cosine of fixed frequency f naught. I sample it, and I get, you know, what, two lines of work, and I have it. So I don't expect you to memorize. I don't want you to memorize anything. Internalize is fine. You use it so often, and it's just there. Open book, open note exams, not a fan of memorization. All right, discrete time frequency is omega naught equals 2 pi times f naught divided by fs. So you notice that the units, well, so what are the units here of omega naught?
Radians.
Radians per second. No, not radians per second. Just radians. Sorry.
The T is a second.
It always sounds good because half the time it is radians per second, right? And half the time it's not. All right. So what happens is the F naught is in hertz, FS is in hertz. Those units cancel. I'm left with radians. If you go back to the formula, I get 2 pi F naught over FS times little n. So little n is my sample index. It's unit less. Even though, yeah, we got it through sampling, but when we sample, we're trying to abstract away, at least for the purpose of processing the signal and modeling it, we can abstract away seconds, and we have just an index little n. All right, so again, this is in units of, the 2 pi tells me it's a radian, and then I could stop there, or just to emphasize the fact that it's discrete time, I can say radian per sample. Or radians per sample. Again, sample is unit less. And, you know, if I've sampled fast enough, in this case, how many, might be a hard one to answer, I'm trying to think, how many samples per cosine period am I showing here in the slide 2-5?
Four.
Ten.
I hear four, I hear 10. All right, remember, I haven't shown you the whole period on the slide, and that can be, the question occurred to me just now, but if I try to extend this out, I've got to come up at least to a point where I'm matching the other one, the other, you know, peak value. So I'm not sure the answer is as clear as it. So I'm hitting zero at about 2.5 samples, and that should bother you. 2.5 samples. What does that mean? Okay, so we're halfway between 2 and 3, right? So. All right, so I'm hitting this point about 2.5. So if I continue this, I should get to 5 when it's -1 in amplitude, and 7.5 when it's 0, and that takes me to 10 to get one period of, you know, the cosine. And now I got to think, is the answer 10 or 9? It's a little bit tricky. Discrete time is a very strange thing. It's a little, in many ways it's easy to work with, and in some cases it's not, because I don't want to include the value here when the amplitude is 1, because that's in the next period. So I'd have to then, I think it's, let me give it some thought here. I think it's 9. I think the answer is actually 9. Now, so let me think. So I started out at 0. So 1, 2, 3. I see. I started out with index 0. It's 10. So I started out with index 0. So in 10 samples later, I will complete one period of the cosine. So 10 is the right answer. So that's oversampling. That's more than, right, we have to sample at least slightly more than 2 samples per cosine period. Okay, so let's talk about some examples where we don't sample fast enough, or sorry, in this case, what it looks like at, sorry, at different sampling times, sampling rates. Okay, so let's take a cosine at 40 hertz. Can you hear 40 hertz?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, normal hearing, you would. So unless there's some damage to the hearing, it should be within the normal range. Very low frequency. All right, so the lowest key on the piano keyboard is 27.5 hertz, which is really low sound. All right, but you're still going to hear it. Now, we can unify, so I got also a phase shift here of 0.4 pi, an amplitude of 20. So here I'm going to uniformly sample the cosine, and I'm going to try different sampling times, which means I'm trying different sampling rates. Okay, so I, whatever my sampling time is, capital TS, I take my x of t, again, which is this 20 cosine amplitude 20, frequency 40 hertz, phase shift minus 0.4 pi, and I sample this at little n times capital TS. Okay, so that's just the math for it, and now we'll try different values of the sampling time, capital TS. Okay, first up, the sampling time. So we're going to try to answer the following question. How small does TS have to be in order to produce an accurate plot? Now, remember, there's the basic sampling theorem. And we will derive this a couple of different ways later in the class, but the sampling theorem says that my sampling rate has to be greater than twice the maximum frequency. So in this case, if it's a cosine, a cosine that's over all time, then f max is just the cosine frequency. In our case, 40 hertz. All right, so for f max equal to 40 hertz. That means that the sampling rate has to be greater than 80. Now remember, this key here is greater than 80 hertz. Now what's the sampling time for that? So let's do 100 hertz. So the sampling rate be 100 hertz. The sampling time is 1/100th of hertz, absolutely. So 0.01 seconds, I'm sorry, I got the units wrong. Yeah, 1/100th is right. So 0.01 seconds, so 10 milliseconds. So just 1 over this. Now, if the sampling rate is greater than 100 hertz, what happens to the sampling time? Does it increase, decrease, stay the same?
Decreases,
right. So these examples are in all cases, they are less than 0.01 seconds. So any of these different sampling times satisfy the sampling theorem. And the sampling theorem is useful because if you follow the sampling theorem, it means that we at least have the possibility of reconstructing the signal from its sample, the continuous time signal from its discrete time samples. There's a possibility of doing that. But in practice, if we want to, we might want to sample at a faster rate so we track the amplitude better. So if the amplitude matters, we want to crank up the sampling rate when we can. So here's some examples. So if we want to plot, so MATLAB code is on the lower left. So the code that's in the lower left is the last or the bottom example of this. So I can start with sampling time of 0.005 seconds. What is the sampling rate for that? Got a calculator? 4,000. So it's our 2.5, it's 1/2, so the sampling time has been reduced by, what, 50, half. So the sampling rate should go up by double, right? So okay, and you look at that and you go, well, so I show you the samples. How many samples per period 5? And then if we connect the dots of those sample amplitudes, doesn't much look like a sinusoid to me. Okay. Something else certainly has periodicity to it, but it did not kind of look what I expected in shape. But there are some things it captures quite well. I mean, at first glance, you go, well, that's a terrible sinusoid, and I'd agree with you. But what does it capture?
Amplitude.
Frequency. And frequency. Okay, amplitude, it captures the 20, although it's hard to see. Maybe the axes are small and font, but the axes are minus 20 to 20 on the vertical axes. Okay, so it captures that nicely, good. Now, how does it capture the frequency of the cosine?
Period.
Now, how did you know that? How did you determine the period of the upper plot? Do I go from max to max or from min to min? Is there another way I can?
Max to max,
that gives me, so a maximum value to the next maximum value, that's a period, I take, which is 20. Minimum value, or I could do the minimum value minus 20 to the next minimum value minus 20, that's also a period. Can I do something in between? Zeros, right? The zero crossings tell you what? How many times does the cosine cross zero in a period?
Twice.
Okay. So the zero crossings is another way to map back to frequency. You'll notice that the zero crossings, I have the correct number of them. Remember, it's the same, so what am I plotting here? I'm plotting, I guess I had hard numbers there in the, so this is following, I think, a book example. So the, I'm showing you, I guess, how many periods of the sinusoid here? Three, I guess, a little bit more than three. Slightly more than three. But you'll notice that the, if you compare all three plots, you'll see the same number of periods shown, right? So by increasing the sampling rate or equivalently reducing the sampling time, I get a better tracking of the amplitude. But in all three cases, I have the right number of zero crossings. And that I can relate to frequency. If I go peak to peak or valley to valley, I also get the right notion of the period. Yeah, it's kind of nice. I like zero crossings better in practice. I've done a lot of frequency detection over the years, and the zero crossings are a little bit more reliable than the peak or the min value, just when you have noise and other measurement artifacts and interference in there. But in the ideal case, it doesn't matter. When we got it's all in MATLAB, it's fine. All right, so the next example is the middle plot. So now my sampling time is half of what it was in the uppermost plot. So now the frequency is doubled again. The sampling rate has doubled again to 400 hertz. And we track what? Does this compare the upper to the middle? Middle does a little better tracking, right, of the sinusoid. And now it looks a lot more like a sinusoid. But what artifacts do you see in the middle plot?
The peak and the trough.
So the peak, is that still at 20? Sure, but so what's wrong with the peak?
On the second plot?
The middle plot, yeah.
It doesn't look like anything's wrong with it. From what I can see, it looks like it's at 20.
Yeah, it is at 20. We're good. Okay, so what artifacts are you seeing in the middle plot? Does it look a nice smooth? No. So it's got these artifacts just from connecting the dots. So you can see that we're connecting the dots. There's a piecewise linear, so between each two dots, I draw a line. You know, like we did when we were 5 years old or whatever, and sometimes we still do. I still have fun doing this too. I have also a daughter, so we have fun doing this. But this, but you can see it. It's an artifact you can see. Now the bottom plot, we really reduce the sampling time, which means you really crank up the sampling rate. So what's the sampling rate in the bottom plot? So this is 10 to the minus
4,
right? So the sampling rate is 10 to the 4th. 4 zeros, 10,000. So 10,000 hertz. We're really cranking up the sampling rate. And it's looking really like a sinusoid. Okay, so the book points out that, you know, if you do 20 times over sampling, it should look pretty good. Now, of course, it's up to you. It's your eyes. Maybe 24. So I've been using 24. If you now notice, now maybe that's clicking. So I've been using 24 times the cosine rate. So 12 times over sampling. So go back to slide 2-4, and you'll notice that's what I did. So in the MATLAB code, it maybe looked like it just came out of nowhere, but now you know where it comes from. So I picked the sampling rate to be 24 times F0 to get a good, nice, smooth cosine. Okay, maybe 20 would have been good enough. You know, I just went with 24. If I go with 40, yeah, sure, it's going to be better, but I may not be able to see the difference. So at some point, you can keep increasing the sampling rate, and yeah, it will do a better job tracking the amplitude, but you may not be able to see it. Or if you're playing the audio, you may not be able to hear it. So at some point, there's just overkill for what you need. All right. So. Or diminishing returns as you increase the sampling rate beyond a certain point. So back to slide 2-6. Okay, any questions so far? Or more questions? Good.
Clarification, on that last one you said the sampling rate was 10 to the 4?
I hope I got that right, yeah.
Then what's the 250 samples per cycle?
Oh, this is per cycle.
And what
so did I not mess? Did I not get that one right?
What would you
call it? No, you got that right, but what's the samples per cycle? Like, what's
by cycle, I mean it should have been cosine period. Right. So if you another way to think about it is, you know, the I wonder if I made a mistake on that one. Let me think about this. All right, so the cosine frequency is at 40 hertz. And that means that the period of the cosine is 1 over 40.
Yeah, that's right.
Did I get it right?
Okay. It would be 10,000 divided by 250, which is 40.
Divided by 40.
So you need one more zero.
I'm just worried that I'm off by a 2 here. All right, so if I have 40 hertz for my cosine frequency, the periodicity in continuous time is 25 milliseconds. My sampling time is, in MATLAB you can repeat ANS, the answer is whatever you last computed, so you can reuse it if you want to. And I divide that by 0.0001, Okay, 250. I got it. I can get things wrong. Please, yeah, please check. So we're good on slide 2-6 with the number. The number is up there for samples per cycle. All right, so that's sampling. We'll come back to sampling several times during the semester and go a little more deeply into it as we go. All right, now we're rolling on the books, and now we're in section 2-5 for slide 2-7. So now we're trying to make the jump from a frequency value or component that we can represent with a cosine, so it's a real valued signal, to now a complex sinusoid, or sometimes called a complex exponential, where complex sinusoid is a special case. So now we're going to talk about, work our way toward an oscillating exponential, which you had seen as phasors and circuit theory. All right, so let's get there. So review on real valued exponential signals. So I think about e to the at, use this in many different ways. So if I look at now real value, so it means that e to the at, a and t are both real value. So a is just ultimately some constant. So we know if a is less than zero, as t goes to infinity, will decay to zero. We know that if a is greater than zero, the amplitude grows without any bound as time goes to infinity. And when A is zero, we get one. Get one back. And to plot this in MATLAB, you know, not too difficult on this one, luckily. It's exp is the exponential. And the argument could be either real or complex. For our case, we're just doing real valued arguments for the exponential. So I'm going to plot over, you know, 2 seconds of time from minus one to one in inclusive. So I've got the two, I got e to the t on the left plot and e to the minus t on the right plot. And I've highlighted the origin in the time in the horizontal axis, which gives us one in the vertical axis. So e to the zero is one. So I'll review. Another review as we make our way toward complex exponentials. I know you've done this a lot over the years. It's just good to kind of bring it back. Okay, so complex numbers, and we do a lot of complex numbers and a lot of work with complex value variables and complex value functions in this class. It's just kind of good to remember some of these things. And again, you can always look them up in the book as needed or elsewhere. Complex numbers, we have a Cartesian option, x plus jy for real x and y. We have a polar version, magnitude and phase, and we'll put a lot of use in the magnitude and phase form when we get to the frequency domain. And you'll see a little bit of that already in homework one. So it's in one of the problems in homework one. Converting from polar to Cartesian coordinates. All right, so on the upper right, I've got x and y in Cartesian form, and then the polar form with r and theta. So again, we just let, you know, standard stuff, right? X equals r cosine theta, y is r sine theta. But when I go the other way around, Cartesian to polar, pretty familiar stuff, right? R is just the radius here, just the distance, and theta is an arctangent. And yeah, we can be more careful on the arctangent, the two-argument arctangent, to make sure we get the SIGN right. Some stuff you've also used before, and we'll use it again, and it's also in homework one. Euler's formula, e to the j theta is cosine theta plus j sine theta. We'll use this a lot in the class. And of course, if, did I miss a minus sign? I did. It happens. All right, so e to the minus j theta is cosine theta minus j sine theta. All right, so if I just plug that in directly, All right, so this, the second one should be e to the minus j theta. So if I plug in minus theta into cosine theta. My cosine of minus theta gives us cosine theta back. I plug in negative theta into sine, and I get minus sine theta back, because it's odd in symmetry. What you also use a lot of times is what the book calls, I never heard it called this, but the book calls it the inverse Euler formula. So now if I add e to the j theta plus e to the minus j theta, I get 2 times cosine theta. And more generally, if I have a complex number or complex value plus its conjugate, I can write that in the 2 cosine theta form. We'll use this a lot in the semester. There's a similar formula for the sine. So e to the j theta minus e to the minus j theta. Again, I can just expand out e to the j theta using Euler's formula, and we'll get what's on the slide. So let's do that. So e to the j theta plus e to the minus j theta, expand out the first term, cosine theta plus j sine theta plus cosine theta minus j sine theta, and then the sine terms just cancel. Fine, so we're left with 2 cosine theta. And a similar derivation for the other one. E to the j theta minus e to the minus j theta gives me 2j. So the key here is 2j, not 2. 2j sine theta. This gives us the complex sinusoidal signal. So if I have now I think about it as a function of time, e to the j, 2 pi f naught t. Write it out in Euler's formula, I get a real component, it's a cosine, frequency f naught, and there's an imaginary component that's a sine at frequency f naught. And again, you looked at this thing and you go, I'm gonna ask you, why do I even care? What's a good application of complex signals? Are there any? Is this just a mathematical model that I have to put up with? Could it be in any of the consumer electronics that you use? You can make stuff up because I can't Google right now, so I could, but I waste time.
Power.
Okay, tell me about power.
So you have real power and also, I guess, the imaginary part, and you're trying to minimize Q, I guess.
Yeah, by the way, I'm a discrete time software person, so you can make up. I remember some reactive power.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Something about that.
So there is the notion of complex value, power transfer, complex value. Okay, so that's one application. How about another?
Whenever you're doing impedance and you're trying to calculate, when you're trying to add add and subtract rather than multiply.
Yeah, so it turns out, so now I'm a little bit familiar, now I'm a more familiar ground for me at least. Right, so for a capacitor or inductor, you have impedance that's imaginary valued. And the resistor would have something that's real valued. So your total impedance would be, if you have R and C or RL or RLC, you've got an impedance that's complex value. So as a function of frequency or however you want to go about it. So that's definitely one. So I'll give you a third one. Almost any communication system, two-way digital communication system and a discrete-time digital communication system uses this. We send data on both the real and the imaginary component. LTE on your smartphone, Wi-Fi, DSL, cable modems, power line communications. There are few. Okay, there's some dial-up modems back in the 90s and 80s that didn't do this, but even the later ones, the higher data rate, quote unquote, used this idea. So we actually do. We send now. We don't send. The trick is that we don't send a complex valued waveform over the wire or the air, but we send two signals, cosine and sine, and we can send a message on the cosine and a message on the sine, and they stay out of each other's way. They're orthogonal to each other. So that's kind of a nice, in other words, one of them is 90 degrees out of phase. So we use this idea of two dimensions being orthogonal to each other, one is a cosine and one is a sine, in almost every communication system we have as two-way digital discrete time. So it's more than just a bunch of math. It really does get used. Okay. So here's a plot in the MATLAB code. So here's a plot of the, so which is it? So which of these two is the real? Which of these two plots is the real part?
First one.
Well, first one.
Blue.
All right, so give me blue. All right, so the blue is the cosine, the other one's the sine. So I've just superimposed the two, and there's a MATLAB command called hold, which will let you put a plot over the other plot. And that's what I did in the previous slide to show you the stem plot overlaid with the plot in MATLAB. Okay, so we're kind of gathering some momentum here on lots of different ways we're looking at signals. I just want to put them in one slide. I mean, the book doesn't assemble it, but I went ahead and, there are a lot of things I'm adding to what's in the book. So here are many faces that we've already seen of signals. Yeah, we can think of a signal as a function with a formula, cosine t, continuous time, cosine pi n, in discrete time. Sequence of numbers, MATLAB, Python, whatever. Create a vector of values over some finite number of samples. Set of properties. So we just talked about, we know the cosine is even. Was it? So the cosine is even, symmetric about the origin. And the sine is odd symmetric. So that's a property that we could talk about a signal. Piecewise representation, if you remember, the rectangular pulse had this piecewise form. So we talked about it with a different definition over different intervals of time, but yet another way to describe a signal. So there's room for a fifth one. That's later. There's a fifth one coming. That's later. So again, these are all mathematical models that we can use to approximate a measured or observed signal. We talked about this one already, where zero means off and one means on, and off again. The cosine is a good model of a single tone, a frequency that you might hear. Okay, let's move on now. This breaks through now to chapter three. So chapter two, it's had some stuff, some new things, some old things, some things connected to circuit theory, some phasers in there. For example, let's talk about data conversion connecting to embedded systems through 19K. We hit power systems and RLC circuits, which is also connecting to circuit theory, 411, and maybe even the intro to EE class 302. All right, so let's go ahead and break on into chapter three of the book. So now we're going to make the jump. Don't worry, we'll use cosines and sines a lot as a real valued signal. But now we want to make a jump to look at frequency content. In this representation, when we switch to the complex sinusoidal form, we'll see something that might be surprising. There is a negative frequency that suddenly shows up. It was always there. It just sometimes gets hidden and all the details and the mathematical representation. Okay, so I take the cosine here of fixed frequency, F naught, and a phase, phi naught. And I can write this as the real part of e to the j theta, where theta is the argument of the cosine. So it's 2 pi F naught t plus phi zero. And I can break the exponential, right? So if I take e to two things added to j and 2 e to the a plus b, I get e to the a times e to the b, right? So that it's a nice property of the exponential. That means that now I can separate out two terms. There is a constant amplitude that's complex value. This is e to the j phi naught. It's a constant. And the second term, e to the j 2 pi f naught t, varies with time. So that's my oscillating signal. Right? So in the real component, what do I have? Cosine or sine? Cosine. And as an imaginary component, I have a sine. So it's a longer way to write out a cosine, right? But it still has got some nice uses. In fact, this formulation is the foundation for frequency analysis in practical systems. This is going to lead us to the Fourier series later in Chapter 3, before I get there on Tuesday. And there's a discrete time version of that, fast Fourier transform, discrete Fourier transform. That's embedded in MP3 players. It's in cellular and Wi-Fi. Use it as another way to get more signals through in transmission. Lots of applications for this. Take a while to get there, but we'll get there. So now the spectrum here, which is widely used, like the term bandwidth is used in a lot of different ways. Some technically correct and some technically not correct ways. But for us, here's what a spectrum is. Spectrum is a collection of amplitude, phase, and frequency info to express more complicated signals. We'll do an example in just a second. Now it looks like a bunch of summations, which it is. But this is incredibly useful stuff. And this can model a lot of different physical phenomena. And we can also use it to transmit data in modern communication systems as well. Lots of uses. All right, so here is a way to take a periodic, for our purpose, we're going to focus on periodic signals to start with. So I have x of t, and we're going to write it as some constant a naught, which is real value, plus some finite sum of cosines. And it is, we can use this for systems that are not harmonically, or not periodic, actually. The way I've written it can be used either way. So if you dig into the summation, I have, in each term of the summation, there's an amplitude, a frequency, and a phase. And there are capital N of them. So N is a finite number to start with. Later, we can let it go to infinity. Right now, it's just some 10. Pick a number, 10, 20, some number of terms. And each term in the summation is a cosine with gain A sub k, frequency F sub k, and a phase shift phi k. I can also take the sum here of cosines and write it into using the complex sinusoidal form. Either one is fine. Okay, so now I want to go back to an example we've already looked at and see if we can write it in this format. And we're going to keep it simple. We're just going to have two terms to work with. Okay, so if you remember, this was taking a cosine and going through a squaring block. What were the applications of a squaring block? Thank you. applications of the squaring block.
Voice in a phone call?
Okay, so the voice in the phone call, tell me more about that.
Wasn't it, I think you said it had to be squared and there was another function? I may be misremembering.
It is, so a lot of things in the squaring, sometimes a power amplifier will have a squaring effect. That can also happen. So that can be lots of things. It is also the amplitude distortion when you display an image on a monitor screen of any kind. There's a squaring effect of that amplitude when it finally gets displayed. So what you see on your monitor is not exactly what was necessarily captured for that image. It's also a way to decode AM broadcast. I think that might have been the speech application or the voice application. So if I have an AM radio signal that I'm receiving, I can send it through a squaring block and a low-pass filter and recover the audio for the AM radio station. It's a very simple receiver design. All right, now what comes out of here? So I have, this is now, what comes out is cosine squared. This is, what do I call this, x? So I have x of t, my input, and then y of t is x squared. All right, so y of t is 1/2 plus 1/2 cosine 2 pi times 2 f naught t. Right, so the frequency has doubled. So I have two signals I want to represent here. Both are periodic. So let's do the one on the left. So the one on the left I want to find out these. So what's I want A0, A1. What else do I need? I need the frequency and I need a phase. That's on the table. The phase is zero in both cases. What is A0? Let's come back to that. It's the hardest part. What's A1? What's the amplitude? 1. What's the frequency? In this case, I have 440. Remember, this is the x of t. What's A0? What's the average? A0 is the average value. Zero. The average value of a cosine over one period is 0. It's equally, it's as positive as often as it is negative. Now let's do y of t. And I'm going to pick F1. I'm going to keep the same F1, which is 440 hertz. And I'll have A1, I'll have F1. So F1 is still 440. And I'm going to have an A2. Remember, the phases are 0 here. Let's keep with the same F1. Right. So now, the easier here, what's A0? 1/2, right? That's the average value. Now, what's A1? A little trickier. Here, 1/2. Okay, let's skip this one. We'll come back to it. Tell me what A2 is. A2 is? You had it. A2 is? 1/2. Very good. Remember, the frequency on the output is double what's on the input, plus there's the zero frequency component. Okay, now I come back. What's A1? What's left?
1.
Well, wait, what's left? So here's the half, and here's half cosine 2 pi 2 f naught. So what's left? Think smaller than 1.
Zero.
Very good. All right. So it's not. There's nothing. It's gone. Didn't get through. Didn't come through. Good. Okay, now this is what you need for one of the homework problems. So we're going to take... we're going to expand the same idea differently. So we're going to start the same way on the left. We've got some constant A naught, and we get a finite sum of cosines, where each cosine has a different amplitude, frequency, and phase. Now I'm going to expand the cosine using, I guess the inverse Euler formula. All right, so I'm going to take cosine and expand it as a sum of two exponentials. So you can think, well, I guess it is Euler's formula, but using it the other way, however you want to look at it. So instead of taking two exponentials, e to the j theta and e to the minus j theta, and collapsing that down to two cosine, I'm going the other direction. So I take a cosine, and I expand it as a sum of two complex sinusoids, e to the j theta and e to the minus j theta. Now, in order for this to work out, we also have to figure out what to do with A of K to make all this work out. And so we can do that, we can relate that back to all X of K is just the original we had in the earlier case, AK e to the JPK. And for Euler's formula to work out, whatever is in this term has to be then complex conjugated to get the second term. That way, if we add them together, we get a cosine. If that relationship isn't there, you either have to have a plus or a minus here. We won't get back to a cosine or a sine. So if the plus is here, we get back to a cosine. If the minus is here, we get back to a sine. So now we're going to represent as a two-sided spectrum. Now we're going to include the negative frequencies that are there mathematically and have physical meaning in some cases. So now I have, remember, I have capital N terms, so I have capital N cosines, plus this A naught, which is a frequency 0 hertz term, a DC term, average value. So that means my two-sided spectrum, I have two N plus 1 frequencies. I have the DC term, A naught. I have N positive frequencies, and I have N negative frequencies. And I can list them out here. So I have 0 frequency, value X naught. And X naught could be complex, but for our cases, our signals are real. X naught would be, actually, X naught has to be real valued as we have set this up. Frequency F1, I have an amplitude of 1/2 X1, and so forth. So I have, my spectrum consists of a list of frequency components and the possibly complex valued amplitude to represent the magnitude and phase of that frequency component. And that's how we're going to represent a spectrum. So this is a frequency domain representation for the signal X of T. So to try to end with an example in the last minute here. So I have it's very similar to homework, right? So I have an X of T, it's periodic. I have a DC term 10, cosine at 200 pi radians per second, which is 100 hertz, another cosine at 250 hertz, and I can expand each of the cosine terms in e to the j theta and e to the minus j theta, so I get the positive and negative frequencies. I can plot the signal in the time domain on the right. Remember, I have to choose a sampling rate much greater than the maximum frequency. What is the maximum frequency? 250, right? My frequencies are 0. Hertz, 100 hertz, and 250 hertz. So I have to sample at a rate much higher than 500 hertz to plot. And 24 times that would be even more awesome, right, oversampling. So 24 times 250. And then graphically, I have 5 frequency components, and I can just plot them on a frequency axis in hertz, and then the amplitude would simply be the complex valued amplitude at each frequency component. Which is on homework. Okay, thank you for staying over. I'll be around for office hours starting now.